University of California Television presents this podcast of Conversations with History, the Struggle for Human Rights in Iran, with Shahreed Abadi, recorded in May 2006. The Conversations with History series is hosted by Harry Kreisler, director of UC Berkeley's Institute of International Studies. For more information about this and other UCTV programs, visit us online at www.uctv.tv. Enjoy the presentation.
Welcome to A Conversation with History. I'm Harry Kreisler of the Institute of International Studies. Our distinguished guest today is Shireen Ebadi, who is the 2003 Nobel Prize winner. She is an Iranian human rights lawyer who teaches at Tehran University, and she has just written Iran Awakening with Azadeh Moveni. Joining us in the studio is Banafesh Kanush, who will interpret. Welcome to Berkeley. Looking back, how did your parents shape your thinking about the world?
در مادرتون اثر گذاشتن روی دیدگاه شما از جهان.
من در یک خانواده فرهنگی به دنیا آمدم. پدر من عمیقا معتقد به تساوی حقوق زن و مرد بود و این رو در زندگیش هم کاملا رعایت می‌کرد.
I was born to parents who came from educational backgrounds. My father deeply believed in the equality of rights between men and women, and he practiced that in his day-to-day life.
Was there a lot of books and reading and discussion of world events in your home?
بله، پدرم کتابخونه بسیار بزرگی داشت. من هرگز پدرم رو بدون کتاب ندیدم، یعنی یا داشت کاری انجام میداد و یا وقتی که بیکار بود همیشه کتابی دستش بود.
Yes, my father had a very large library, and I don't recall seeing him without a book, because either he was busy with some work, or when it was his free time, he was reading a book.
Your family was very much affected by the fall of Mossadegh through the CIA intervention. Tell us a little about that.
من در سنین کودکی بودم که CIA کودتایی رو ترتیب داد و دکتر مصدق قهرمان ملی ایران رو ساقط کردند و زندانی شد و پس از اون طرفداران دکتر مصدق رو گرفتن، عده‌ای خانه نشین شدن. پدر من هم از جمله افرادی بود که برای چند سال شغلش رو از دست داد و این خب طبیعتاً در زندگی ما هم تأثیر گذاشت.
I was young when the CIA started a coup in Iran that overthrew the national hero Dr. Mohammad Mossadegh. He was consequently arrested. A number of his followers, too, were arrested. Some were forced to give up their jobs and stay at home. My father also was forced to give up his job for a few years, and naturally that affected our lives.
Looking back, how did your mother affect you and shape what you became?
مادر من بسیار مهربان بود و تمامی حواسش متوجه تربیت بچه ها بود و این رو بیش از هر چیزی مهمتر می دانست. من هم وقتی که بچه دار شدم یاد گرفتم که بچه مهمترین مسئله زندگی یک زنه.
My mother was extremely kind, and she devoted all her attention to raising her children. She believed that that was the most important task for a mother. And when I had my own children too, I took that lesson to my house and believe that motherhood, a good motherhood, is the most important role for every woman.
When you were growing up or through college and law school, were there any teachers that had a profound impact on you?
بله یک استادی بیش از همه روی من تاثیر گذاشت استاد پیری بود که در حقیقت قلم رو به دست من داد و من رو بسیار تشویق میکرد که بنویسم و من اولین کتابم رو با همکاری این استاد نوشتم
Yes, there was a professor. He was an old man, and he was the one who encouraged me to take up the pen and to write. And in fact, I wrote my first book together with him.
What led you to decide to become a lawyer?
من بعد از اتمام دانشکده حقوق بلافاصله قاضی شدم. بعد از انقلاب به من گفتن که چون زنی نمیتونه قاضی بشی و من رفتم به کانون وکلا و شدم وکیل دادگستری.
Immediately after finishing law school, I became a judge. Following the revolution, I was told that I could no longer serve as a judge because I was a woman. So I decided to join the Iranian Bar Association and practice law.
Mm-hmm. And after the Shah fell, was overthrown, you lost your position as a judge, although you were the first woman to be a judge in Iran.
من اولین زن نبودم جز سری اول زنهایی بودم که قاضی شدم و اما اولین زنی بودم که شدم در ایران رئیس دادگاه
I was not the first woman who became a judge. I was part of the first series of women who entered the system to become judges. But I was the first woman who started presiding over a court.
As a judge, this is before the Islamic Revolution, what body of law did you use to reach decisions?
سیستم حقوقی ایران قبل از انقلاب بسیار نزدیک به سیستم حقوقی غرب خصوصا فرانسه بود.
Iran's legal system prior to the revolution was very close to the legal system in the West, and particularly France.
It must have been a shock when you lost your position as a judge after the Islamic Revolution. Tell us a little about your feelings and how you adjusted.
من شغلم رو از دست داده بودم و احساس کردم که این فقط صدمه به من نیست بلکه یک آغاز حمله است برای حقوق زن و همینطور هم شد بعد از اون قوانینی تصویب شد که همه به زیان زن و تبعیض‌آمیز بود و به همین دلیل من فعالیتم رو متمرکز کردم روی حقوق زن.
I had lost my job and I had realized that by losing it, it was just not my job lost, but that the system was hurting, in fact, women in society. And that was indeed what had happened. That was the beginning of the attack on women, and a series of laws were passed consequently that were very discriminatory. So I decided to focus all my attention on promoting women's rights and issues.
Before we talk about that, I want to ask you, what are the skills and the temperament required to be a lawyer before the Islamic Revolution and after?
هر کس با انگیزه‌ای سراغ علم حقوق میره بعضی ها به خاطر اینکه این رشته اصولاً رشته پولسازیه و میتونن ثروتمند بشن بعضی ها به خاطر اینکه حقوق دروازه خوبی است به دنیای سیاست، از اونجا میتونن سیاستمداران معروفی بشن، و بعضی ها به خاطر اینکه راه بهترین راه برای کمک به عدالت حقوقه. هر کس انگیزه خاصی داره. انگیزه من در حقیقت کمک به اجرای عدالت بود.
In principle, everyone has a certain motivation by going to law school. Some want to make big money by practicing law. Others want to use law as an entry into politics and into political life, and to succeed in that arena. And for others, the practice of law is a way to serve justice. That was what it meant to me, a tool to serve justice.
And one of the turning points in your life after the revolution was the killing of your brother-in-law, correct? That sensitized you to the need for a new sense of justice in the system.
طبیعی است که اعدام برادر شوهرم بسیار من رو غمگین کرد، اما مهمتر از این مسئله این بود که در مدتی نزدیک به کمتر از یک هفته حدود 3000 جوان رو تیرباران کردن فقط به جرم سیاسی.
Naturally, the execution of my brother-in-law made me very sad. But what was even sadder was that in a period of probably just a week, about 3,000 young individuals, people, were executed only for being active in political life.
In making this adjustment to this new regime and this new set of problems, how did your tasks as a lawyer change?
من به عنوان یک وکیل همواره به دنبال عدالت بودم و متوجه شدم که متهمین سیاسی در کشور من مظلوم ترین افراد هستند، برای اینکه هم بیگناه به زندان میرند و همین که در زندان با اونها بسیار بدتر رفتار میکنند تا یک متهم عادی، مثلا سارق یا قاتل.
I realized that justice was at stake greatly, and that my political defendants were at the core of my attention, that they were the most oppressed people in our society, because they were not only arrested innocently, but they were also treated worse than any common criminal in prison.
There is a sense in your book that the law is really in your soul.
And
I am reminded of the story you tell after the revolution, where you and your husband, who you loved very much, signed a postnuptial agreement about your rights. Tell us about that, because it gives us a good sense of what the law means to you and what a society without law cannot give.
من همواره انتظار دارم که قانون عدالت رو برقرار بکنه، و وقتی که یک قانونی این انتظار رو برآورده نمی‌کنه، سعی می‌کنم راه حلی پیدا کنم که به عدالت نزدیک‌تر بشه.
I always believe that law must serve justice, and when it fails to do so, I try to find ways to make sure that law brings us closer to justice.
وقتی که من و همسرم ازدواج کردیم، در یک شرایط قانونی مساوی بودیم، ولیکن بعد از انقلاب قانون عوض شد و من تمامی حقوقم رو از دست دادم و تبدیل شده بودم به یک برده، و حالا که قبلا همسان و برابر با شوهرم بودم.
Before the revolution, my husband and I married under very fair and equal conditions according to the law. However, after the revolution, I lost all my rights. I turned practically into a slave, whereas I was an equal partner before the revolution.
این احساس بی عدالتی که من می کردم در رفتار من در خانواده تأثیر گذار بود و روزی با شوهرم صحبت کردم، گفتم من از این بی عدالتی قانونی رنج می برم و پیشنهاد کردم که قراردادی با هم ببندیم و او تمامی این حقوقی رو که من قبلا داشتم اعتراف بکنه که بازم به من خواهد داد و همسرم این رو قبول کرد.
The injustice that I felt was affecting my behavior at home. One day I spoke with my husband and told him that I suffered from this legal injustice. And I proposed that we sign a new agreement by which he would restore my equal rights. He agreed.
جالب روزی که من و همسرم به دفترخونه می رفتیم که این قرارداد رو امضا کنیم، مردی که دفترخونه بود خطاب به شوهرم گفت تو مگه دیوونه شدی که یه چنین قراردادی رو میخوای امضا کنی؟ و شوهرم گفتش که من برای نجات زندگی خانوادگیم باید این کار رو بکنم. و از اون روز به بعد من واقعا احساس کردم که چون مساوی با همسرم هستم میتونم این زندگی رو تحمل بکنم و ادامه بدم و خوشبختانه تا الان هم زندگی زناشویی ما ادامه پیدا کرده.
It's interesting that when we actually went to sign the contract, the person, the clerk there who was sitting in the office turned to my husband and said, are you crazy to do this? And he said, well, in order to save my family life, I need to do this. And I felt that justice was created afterwards. And fortunately, to this day, our marriage life has stayed together.
Wonderful. Help us understand how justice moves forward in Iran. On the one hand, you have to navigate between Islamic law, the traditional text, the interpretations. On the other hand, you have a sense of international law. For example, in the case of women's rights. Tell us a little about moving justice forward. Is it particular cases that make that possible?
قوانین نامناسبی که ما داریم، حکومت ادعا میکنه که این قوانین ناشی از اسلامه و من با مطالعه دقیق اسلام به حکومت نشون میدم که این تفسیر غلط از اسلامه و ما میتونیم قوانین بهتری داشته باشیم.
The government claims that the unsatisfactory laws that prevail in the country are in fact Islamic laws, and that's how they justify it. But I studied Islamic texts and law very carefully, and my efforts are geared towards proving to the government that they are in fact basing the law on a wrongful interpretation of Islamic law, and that indeed there are other interpretations.
پرونده‌هایی که من قبول می‌کنم بیشتر برای این است که نتیجه عملی یک قانون رو به مردم و به جامعه بشناسونم، مثل چیزا پرونده‌هایی که در کتاب ازش یاد کردم و در این گونه محاکمات از خبرنگارا قبلا دعوت می‌کنم که بیان و راجع به این مسئله بنویسن و وقتی که مردم نتیجه عملی یک قانون بد رو می‌بینن اون وقت شروع می‌کنن به حکومت فشار بیارن که قانون عوض بشه. این روش باعث شده که من موفق بشم و چند قانون رو هم عوض کنم.
The cases that I generally work on are those that I try to focus on the practical results of. To show the people what the practical results of a law are. To show that to society. Oftentimes when I take a case to trial, I invite reporters to come and write about the case beforehand and to raise public awareness of the results. By creating that awareness, people then put pressure on the government and demand the change in laws. By carrying out this technique, I've in fact succeeded in changing a number of laws.
In your book, you talk about the time when you advised the Women's Caucus in the Parliament on some new legislation. And you tell us about that, because your arguments were really showing that Islamic law had many interpretations, and that was what the debate was about.
بله من به خواهش عده‌ای از نمایندگان رفرمیست قانون خانواده‌ای نوشته بودم که کاملا منطبق با اسلام بود و در این حال عدالت را هم اجرا می‌کرد. در جلسه‌ای که بود تعداد زیادی از روحانیون که اکثرا هم بنیادگرا بودند نشسته بودند و از من ایراد گرفتند.
Yes, on the suggestion of some reformist members of parliament, I drafted a family law that was compatible with Islamic law and at the same time served justice. In a meeting that I had with members of parliament, there were a group of the members of clergy present, most of whom who were fundamentalists. They strongly opposed the draft law.
من کتاب‌های مذهبی زیادی با خودم برده بودم و هر ایراد اینها رو با توجه به کتاب‌های فقهی جواب می‌دادم و کتاب رو هم جلوشون می‌ذاشتم که بدونند من درست میگم. و در این هنگام یکی از بنیادگرایان که خیلی هم قدرت داشت به مستخدم گفتش که چیزی آهسته در گوشش گفت و مستخدم به من گفتش که بیایید بیرون، شما رو پای تلفن میخوان. من وقتی که از اتاق آمدم بیرون متوجه شدم که کسی من رو پای تلفن نخواسته و اون مستخدم گفت دیگه تو حق نداری توی اتاق بدی. در حقیقت من رو بیرون از اتاق کردند برای اینکه حرفایی که من میزدم اونها نمیتونستن استدلال بکنن که حرف من درسته، بنابراین ترجیح دادن اصلا حرف من رو نشنون.
I walked into that meeting with a number of religious texts, and whenever I made an argument, I would show the people the text that I was referring to prove to them that, in fact, these are religious texts that defend my case and this draft law. But eventually, one of the clergy who was sitting there, who was very fundamentalist, decided that he no longer wanted to hear the case, and I noticed that he whispered something in the ears of the tea server, and then he left the room and then came back to Dr. Ebadi, then came back to me and said, well, there's a phone waiting for you, someone's calling you. When I left the room, I realized that in fact there was no one calling for me, and when I tried to re-enter the room, he informed me that I was no longer welcome in that room. So because what I was saying was based on the truth and justice, they couldn't accept it any longer, and they couldn't justify another argument, so they chose not to have me in the room.
در حقیقت مشکل ما با بنیادگرایان اسلامی همینه، اصلا نمیخوان حرف کسی رو بشنون.
In fact, our problem with Islamic fundamentalists is this very issue. They simply don't want to hear what others have to say.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, a theme that runs throughout your book and your career is a fight against the abuse of power, unchecked power, power that is not balanced by law, that's fair and just.
بله همواره من سعی کردم مانع از سوء استفاده از قدرت بشم یا هم قدرت سیاسی و هم سوء استفاده از مذهب و احساسات مذهبی مردم سوء استفاده و همچنین مانع از سوء استفاده از زورگویی ثروتمندان
Yes, I have always tried to prevent the abuse of power, whether to get political gains or to play with religion or the religious sentiments and feelings of the populace, or to use power to add to wealth.
Mm-hmm. And in looking back at this evolution of law and the really hard work that you had to do, how did you do all that you had to do? Because you were still a mother, raising a family. The family was very important to you, but you were also confronting these very difficult cases that put you in the public eye.
من از جوانی عادت داشتم که حداقل 12-13 ساعت در روز کار کنم و اگه آدم از وقتش خوب استفاده کنه میبینه 24 ساعت خیلی مدت زیادی است.
Since a young age, I got used to working 12 to 13 hours a day. And in fact, when you get used to working that kind of schedule, you realize that 24 hours is in fact a lot of time.
و در این حال من باید به شما بگم که وضعیت من شبیه فردی است که در یک اقیانوس سوار قایقه و قایقش میشکنه او چاره‌ای نداره جز اینکه دائما شنا کنه بلکه خودش رو به جایی برسونه ما هم در یه چنین وضعیتی گرفتار شدیم قوانین تمام به ضد زن عوض شد بایستی کاری بکنیم من حق ندارم خسته بشم حق ندارم ناامید بشم برای اینکه اون موقع دیگه بلافاصله غرق میشم
I compare my situation to a person on board a ship. When there is a shipwreck, the passenger then falls in the ocean and has no choice but to keep swimming. What happened in our society was that the laws overturned every right that women had. I had no choice. I could not get tired. I could not lose hope. I cannot afford to do that.
And it's really women and children, in addition to the political prisoners, who are the most vulnerable.
بله، یه ضرب المثل هست میگه قدرت یک زنجیر در ضعیف‌ترین حلقه اون نهفته است. بنابراین بایستی مراقب اون حلقه ضعیف باشیم و حلقه ضعیف در جامعه ما زنان و کودکان و زندانیان سیاسی هستند.
Yes, we say that the power, the strength of a chain lies in the smallest and weakest part of the chain. So you must always protect that so that the chain does not fall apart. Yes, women, children, and political prisoners are the weakest members of our society and need our protection.
It must be very hard to raise children in this context. When I read your book, I was reminded of another guest, Natan Sharansky, talking about his growing up in the then Soviet Union, where on the one hand there is dogma, that the children have to understand, but at the same time you are giving them knowledge that transcends the conventional wisdom of the state.
بله سخته اما برای اینکه این کار انجام بشه بایستی با صداقت با بچه ها صحبت کنیم من یک نمونه از کاری که میکنم براتون میگم
Yes, it is difficult, but in order to succeed, you have to speak honestly with the children. I'll give you one example of how I went about doing it.
روزی دختر کوچکم وقتی که 9 سالش بود آمد به من گفتش که مامان دکتر مصدق آدم خوبی بود یا بد بود پرسیدم چطور گفت برای اینکه در کتاب پارسالمون نوشتن که این قهرمانی بود که نفت ایران رو ملی کرد و در کتاب امسالمون نوشتن که این یه آدم بدی بود برای اینکه با روحانیون مخالف بود
One day my younger daughter came home from school and asked me, Mom, was Dr. Mohammad Mosaddegh a good person or a bad person? And I said, well, how come? She said, well, in our last year's textbook, they said that he was a good person because he had nationalized Iranian oil. But in this year's text, they're saying that he was a bad person because he disagreed to make a coalition with the clergy. I don't understand.
من بهش داستان مصدق و کودتای سیاسی رو گفتم. و در این حال گفتم ببین تو بایستی از معلمت نمره بگیری برای اینکه بتونی کلاس بالاتر بری. در نتیجه وقتی که یه چیزی به تو میگن که با عقلت سازگار نیست، فقط در حدی که نمره قبولی میاری بخون و یاد بگیر بعد از امتحانم فراموشش کن
I told her the story of Dr. Mohammad Mosaddegh and the CIA coup. And I said that you really have to skip this class and this grade and move up to a grade higher and tell your teacher that when you really don't understand, when something, just remember that when something doesn't make logic to you, just read it enough to pass that course And then once you've passed it, forget about it.
Courage seems to be a theme that is implicit in your book. The courage of raising your children, the courage of being involved in so many sensitive cases. What are the roots of your courage? Do you get it from your family or from your knowledge of the law or what?
وقتی که آدم به راهی که انتخاب کرده اعتقاد داشته باشه به صحت اون راه استوارتر گام برمی‌داره و در این حال فراموش نکنیم من یک مسلمان هستم و به وجود خدا اعتقاد دارم و این به من قوت قلب می‌بخشه
When you believe in the rightfulness of your path, you take stronger steps. At the same time, I'm a Muslim and I believe in God, and that gives me additional strength.
من وقتی که راهی رو انتخاب میکنم که میدون که مطمئنم درسته هر کاری بخوام تمام تلاشم رو میکنم و بعد به خدا میگم این تمام کاری بود که من تونستم بکنم حالا از تو میخوام که بقیهش انجام بدی و کمکم کنی.
When I choose a path that I'm sure is the right path to take, I make my best effort to succeed. And when I carry out my best effort, then I leave it to God and let him turn the rest of the events forward for me.
And courage is important. I would like to recount the discovery in a discovery process that you were on an assassination list that had been prepared by agents of the intelligence service. What was your reaction to that?
مهمترین واکنشی که من داشتم این بود که متعجب شدم. متعجب شدم از اینکه من جزء گروه سیاسی نبودم هیچ وقت قصد نداشتم که جای کسی رو در حکومت بگیرم. من فقط یک کسی بودم که مجانی برای جامعه هم کار میکردم. متعجب شدم که چطور یه چنین آدمی اینقدر مورد نفرت یک حکومت میتونه قرار بگیره که وزیر اطلاعات دستور قتلش رو بده.
I was more than anything surprised. I was surprised because I was a person who was not involved in any political agenda that sought to undermine the government, that I had served the people on a pro bono free basis, and that yet I would be so hated that the Ministry of Intelligence would order my murder.
و بعد متاسف شدم از اینکه حکومت ما چطور بین دوست و دشمن جامعه فرقی نمیگذاره.
And then I became very sorrowful when realizing that our government is incapable of really making a distinction between friends and foes.
You write in your book, I knew only too well the permanent limitations of trying to enshrine inalienable rights in sources that lack fixed terms and definitions. But I am also a citizen of the Islamic Republic.
از بافت ملی رو نتونن راحت تشکیل بدن. ولی خب به هر حال من خودم یک شهروند جمهوری اسلامی هستم و باید کار کنم که این قوانین در این بافت به رسمیت شناخته بشه. چه نظری راجع به این گفتتون دارید؟
من متوجه شدم
گفتم یه دونه دیگه میخوام بپرسم. Could you please ask the question again so I can
Well, the question is really that your courage is embedded in living with two distinct really realities. One, what the law requires, a law that allows justice. But on the other hand, you are a citizen of Islamic Republic where the tendency toward abuse of power exists.
من حقوقدانم و وقتی که میرم دادگاه مجبورم از همین قوانین اون چیزی که به نفع موکلینم هست استفاده بکنم.
I am a lawyer, and when I go to court, I have to resort to the same laws to defend the case of my clients in the best possible way I can.
و در این حال من یک استاد دانشگاه و نویسندم هستم و در کار تحقیقاتیم نشون میدم که این قوانین غلطه و ما میتوانیم مسلمان باشیم و قوانین بهتری داشته باشیم.
At the same time, I'm a university professor and a writer. So through my research, I can show when the laws are wrong and that when there are other laws that can serve justice and our rights better.
من میخواستم چیزی در مورد شجاعت به شما بگم.
I wanted to say something about courage.
Yes.
شجاعت بر مبنای اعتماد به نفس میاد. یعنی شما وقتی که مطمئن باشید تصمیمی که گرفتید درسته، اون وقت در مقام اجراش برمیاید به هر قیمتی. کسانی که شجاع نیستند معمولا اعتماد به نفسشون کمه، یعنی مطمئن نیستن تصمیمی که گرفتن درسته.
Courage comes from confidence. When you are confident that your decision is correct, then you will make all your efforts to make it happen. Those who lack courage are often those who are not confident enough on whether their decisions are right or not.
And confidence comes from the family?
از خانواده میاد. از دانش و آگاهی میاد، از تجربه میاد و از شخصیت ذاتی افراد.
It comes from the family, it comes from education, from awareness, it comes from experience, and it comes from the inherent characteristics of each individual.
In addition to the law, is it correct to say that you believe that education is a really important element in changing Iran for the better?
آموزش پرورش ایران
و آموزش نقش خیلی مهمی میتونه ایفا کنه در تغییر ایران، تحولات بهبود ایران.
بله، آموزش مهمترین عامل در بهبود وضعیت هر جامعه است. به عنوان مثال بیش از 65% از دانشجویان دانشگاه های ما دخترند و دانش زنان ایران بسیار بالاست. همین مسئله باعث شده که جنبش فمینیستی در ایران بسیار قوی بشه، خیلی قوی تر از آنچه که در کشورهای همسایه ایران هست.
Yes, education is very important in helping promote a society to a higher level of understanding and awareness. For example, over 65% of Iranian students are female. As a result, there's great awareness about women's rights, and the feminist movement in Iran has become very strong, much stronger than Iran's neighboring countries.
And it is also student movements that appear again and again in your narrative as helping to try to push political change.
بله، جنبش دانشجویی همواره مؤثر در سیاست میتواند باشد و به عنوان یک فرص برای اینکه حکومت راهش رو به درستی تعیین بکنه.
Yes, the student movement can always be a very important tool in bringing change and for putting pressure on the government to choose a new path.
And then the students become victims of the same police state and have become some of your more important cases.
بله، متاسفانه حکومت‌های غیر دموکراتیک به جای اینکه به انتقادات درست جوانان توجه کنند، اونها رو به زندان می‌افکنند.
Yes, unfortunately, rather than listening to the positive criticisms of young people, undemocratic states send them to prison.
But you firmly believe that it's democratization in your own country that will make a difference and make possible these adjustments that the law tells you there should be.
بله، دموکراسی بسیار در اصلاح ساختار سیاسی و قدرت در ایران تأثیرگذار خواهد بود.
Yes, democracy will be very effective in changing the political and power structure in Iran.
اولین پله دموکراسی این است که هر کس بتواند آزادانه به هر کس که میخواد به عنوان نماینده مجلس یا پارلمان یا ریاست جمهوری رأی بده، و حالا اینکه این آزادی رو مردم ایران ندارند.
The first step towards democracy is people to be able to vote for whoever they want in parliament or as president, whereas people in Iran currently don't have that political freedom.
طبق قانونی که در ایران هست، صلاحیت کاندیداهای پارلمان و ریاست جمهوری قبلا باید به تصویب شورای نگهبان برسه، بعد مردم رأی بدن، و به عبارت دیگر مردم بایستی آزاد نیستن که به هر کی بخوان رأی بدن، بلکه فقط بایستی به افرادی رأی بدن که شورای نگهبان میگه.
According to Iranian law, the qualifications of parliamentary and presidential candidates must be approved by the Guardian Council. In other words, people are not free to vote for whoever they want. They're only free to vote whoever the Guardian Council approves.
So a key to democratization, as the writer Ganji has said, is the separation of church and state, really, ultimately.
Ganji موکل منه و من ازش دفاع میکردم. او معتقد به جدایی دین از حکومت. من هم همین اعتقاد رو دارم. فکر میکنم برای اینکه از اعتقادات مذهبی مردم سوء استفاده نشه، بهتره که حکومت از مذهب جدا بشه.
Ganji is my client and he believes in the separation of religion from politics. I too believe in the same. I believe that in order to avoid taking advantage of the religious sentiments of the people, it is necessary to separate religion from politics.
اما مسئله مهم اینجاست که اگر یک جامعه ای دلش خواست و رأی داد که فرهنگ که مذهب از سیاست جدا نباشه، سکولاریسم رو قبول نداشت یا به رادیکال ها رأی داد، مثل الان که حماس به قدرت رسیده، آیا ما که در اینور دنیا نشستیم حق داریم بگوییم که مردم نمیتوانند به آنچه که میخواهند رأی بدهند؟ و آیا حق داریم بگیم که مردم فقط بایستی همان گونه بیندیشند که ما فکر میکنیم؟
But the key point here is that when a society in fact does not want secularism or the separation of religion and politics, but rather chooses to have a religious government in place, like what has happened with the election of Hamas to power, do we as individuals, as a group sitting on the other side of the world, have the right to question why those people have chosen that government, or to say that they must not and that we must change the course of their decision?
مسلماً چنین حقی نداریم. پس برای اینکه ما از این بن‌بست بیرون بیایم، بایستی به تعریف جدیدی از دموکراسی برسیم.
Undoubtedly, we don't have such a right. Therefore, in order to avoid such a deadlock, we need a new definition of democracy.
دموکراسی یعنی حکومت اکثریت، اما اکثریتی که به قدرت میرسه حق نداره هر طوری که بخواد حکومت بکنه. فراموش نکنیم بسیاری از دیکتاتورهای جهان در ابتدا با دموکراسی یعنی رأی مردم به قدرت رسیدن، مثل هیتلر.
Democracy means the majority rule, but a majority that gains power does not have the permission to work in whatever manner it decides. Many dictators were actually elected to power as such too, including Hitler.
Democracy یک چارچوب داره که باید رعایت بشه.
Democracy has a framework that must be observed.
یعنی حکومتی که در اثر انتخابات آزاد به قدرت میرسه نبایستی از چارچوب دموکراسی فراتر بره.
Meaning that a government that reaches power through free elections cannot actually go beyond that framework in its political activities.
چارچوب دموکراسی ضوابط و قواعد حقوق بشره.
And the framework for democracy are human rights, law and regulations.
There is a theme in this book about the failure of external intervention, which you just talked about, in Iranian-U.S. relations. The U.S. has apparently intervened to further democracy, but that, through the CIA, led to the overthrow of Mossadegh, to the support of the Shah, to the support of Saddam Hussein in various ways when he attacked Iran and so on. So as you say somewhere, Iran has a good memory, and we in the United States are not conscious of the way in which our actions have negative consequences within Iran, even though we thought we were furthering democracy, or claimed to think that.
Democracy هیچ وقت به همراه کودتا و یا تانک های نظامی وارد کشور نمیشه.
Democracy can never enter a country through a coup or through military tanks.
دموکراسی یک فرهنگ که بایستی در یک جامعه ایجاد بشه و پیش بره.
Democracy is a culture that must be created in a society and then progress.
کودتایی که CIA در ایران کرد باعث شد که شاه قدرتش رو ناشی از آمریکا بدونه و او مدیون بشه و هرچی بیشتر خرید اسلحه بکنه و تا جایی پیش رفت که معروف شد به ژاندارم خاورمیانه.
As a result of the CIA coup, the Shah was encouraged to buy more and more arms from the United States to serve the United States, and he took it to such far extremes that he finally was recognized as the policeman of the region.
و شاه به تکای حمایتی که از آمریکا میدید شروع به استبداد و نادیده گرفتن رأی مردم کرد.
Through the support he saw coming from the United States for him, he started becoming more oppressive and taking away the rights of the people.
و متاسفانه در حال حاضر هم می‌بینیم که دوستان آمریکا در خاورمیانه اکثرا غیر دموکرات هستند، مثل عربستان سعودی، مثل کویت، مثل سایر کشورهای عربی اسلامی. اینها دموکراسیشون بسیار ضعیفه.
At the same time, nowadays, regretfully, we see that many of the United States' friends in the Middle East are undemocratic. Countries such as Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, elsewhere, these are very undemocratic systems.
If students were to watch this program, how would you advise them to prepare for the future and work toward a world in which we have good relations between our two countries?
مهمترین چیزی که من از دانشجویان میخوام این است که با جنگ مخالفت کنند، مخالفت کنند که ایران رو بمباران بکنند و یا حمله نظامی به ایران بکنند. این مسئله روند دموکراسی رو در ایران صدمه میزنه.
The most important thing I will ask students is to not allow a military attack or bombardment of Iran on the part of the United States. For if that were to happen, it would reverse the democratic trend that has started inside the country.
الان به عراق نگاه کنید، به چه وضعیتی افتاده. صدام حسین ساقط شد، اما وضعیتی که الان در عراق هست به مراتب بدتر از اون زمانی است که صدام حسین بود.
Look at Iraq and the situation there. Well, sure enough, Saddam Hussein was overthrown, but what you have in Iraq is far worse than what it was under Saddam Hussein.
What in your career, in your life story, how can that inform our understanding of the way to create a dialogue that's reasoned and that seeks justice between our two countries?
مهمترین مسئله این است که مردم دو کشور همدیگه رو خوب بشناسن، و این شاید یکی از انگیزه های من بود برای نوشتن خاطراتم. میخواستم از قبل خاطراتم در حقیقت ایران رو و مردم ایران رو به مردم آمریکا بشناسانم.
The best and most important thing is for the people of the two countries to gain a better understanding of each other and of what they are and who they are. In fact, one of the motivations for writing this memoir was an attempt to introduce Iran to the American people.
Dr. Abadi, on that note, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. It's been a great honor to have you on our program, and I want to thank Banafshe for her wonderful interpreting. I'm going to show your book again and recommend to our audience that they buy it, because your purpose has been achieved, and I can't think of a better time to read this book to understand Iran, to understand the relations between our two countries, but also to understand where we might find hope for the future. Thank you very much for being here, and thank you.
Thanks.
And thank you very much for joining us for this conversation with history.
You've been listening to a podcast from University of California Television. For more information about this and other UCTV programs, visit us online at www.uctv.tv.